Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
My brother-in-law died suddenly, and now my sister and her kids have to sell their home. That's why I told my husband we could not put off getting life insurance any longer. An agent offered us a 10-year, $500,000 policy for nearly $50 a month. Then we called SelectQuote. SelectQuote found us identical coverage for only $19 a month, a savings of $369 a year.
Whether you need a $500,000 policy or a $5 million policy, SelectQuote could save you more than 50% on term life insurance.
For your free quote, go to SelectQuote.com. SelectQuote.com. That's SelectQuote.com.
SelectQuote. We shop, you save. Full details on example policies at SelectQuote.com/commercials.
Welcome to this week's five-year plan podcast.
Hey, oh, just me then.
Okay, I did think it was going to be a bit of a sort of muted way, given the result of the weekend, which we will get onto, of course, as Palace.
Oh, really?
The first game of the season.
I think that's the most unnecessary menu we've ever given out on the show, isn't it? Really?
It's not really a menu.
We might be mentioning the.
Well, obviously we will be. And we'll introduce our guests in a bit, but before we do that, we've got our sponsors, of course, which is Vector Printing. For all your printing and embroidery needs, go to vector.co.uk, and that's Vector with a
K.
K. He doesn't want to do the third one.
Fine. And JCIS, the global research and brand consultancy from South London. Visit jc-is.com.
I will.
Hey, I'm staying.
It's only called job, mate. Sorry about that. Has to be done.
You had your moment. You lost it. Okay, so before we get onto the pod, new season of FYP is out against Swansea on August the 26th, which is our next home game. There's loads of stuff in that. £1.50, usual price. Look out for it against Swansea from, I don't know, 1 o'clock, 1:30. Who knows? We'll let you know. And that's it. Who's on the pod this week? Kevin Day.
Hello.
Travis Endicott.
Hello.
Andy Street.
Hello.
Good. Right. What happened on Saturday, Kevin? What happened?
Well, we could have the short version, in which case the pod could end in about a minute's time, or we can have the long version. The short version is that a team with a manager who'd been there less than 6 weeks adapting to a system that they'd had less than 6 weeks and in some cases a couple of days to adapt to, were playing a team with individually inferior players who'd been playing the same system for a year and a half, basically. That's the short version.
That's the long version.
That plus Joel Ward, essentially. But whatever we'll talk about it all night. I was astonished. I was disappointed. Of course I was. We all were. I was astonished at the level of vitriol and criticism from Palace fans. Even during, to be perfectly honest. I mean, it wasn't good in any way, shape or form. But what did we expect? It's going to take some time. And it's... I just clearly think there are some Palace fans who are still sulking about the fact we haven't signed Mamadou Sakho.
We won't. A few weeks left.
I think we won't.
But
do you want to have a charity bet?
Who can have a bet for charity? I think it's too late, so I don't think we'll sign him now because De Boer will think it looks like a sign of weakness. He doesn't fit De Boer's profile. De Boer's not interested. He's not a good enough footballer.
But regardless,
that's an argument for later on in the pod, but right, I just thought right. I thought the criticism after the game was... frankly, ludicrous.
Okay, well, on that then, because
we've
had so many questions. I've put some questions in part one.
Ronald Lee, ludicrous. Sammy Lely, ludicrous.
Tony King.
In Hawaii, I believe.
Nice. Tony King.
Hi, Tony.
I said, on a sliding scale of meltdowns, I'll put this one to Andy, Where does this one sit?
I mean, I've seen so many of them now that I'm rather desensitized to it, frankly. It was a meltdown, but you tend to get meltdowns pretty regularly, don't you?
You talk about player meltdown or fan meltdown?
Well, both. I mean, both could apply, frankly, couldn't they?
Could I assume player a fan meltdown? But
I mean, there's an issue here, isn't there? Sort of management of expectations, where you've been sort of trumpeting the fact that they look amazing in training and that it's the Dutch Revolution and that we've taken on someone who was nearly a World Cup winner in 98 when he made the semi-finals, and in 2000 when I think they reached the final again and lost to France, and, you know, heralded player.
Yeah, great player.
Won the Champions League with Ajax. Did he win it with Barcelona?
Probably.
This is almost like a trivia segment rather than actually any form of analysis. Thank you very much. 100%. But, like, it's not that I'm not fully blaming it on stuff coming out of the club, because a lot of it then comes down to perceptions fans have and expectations that everything is immediately going to be great, and that because we're trying to play the Barcelona way, that immediately they'll look like Barcelona, rather than, to coin a phrase from a good friend, trying to play Barcelona tactics with Barnsley players, which is what it looked like at times. I mean, Scott Dan cannot play, in my opinion, as the central centre back in that three.
Why not?
He's just not a good enough ball player. I mean, he's okay on the ball. He's not intuitive enough with his movement.
We used to herald him as this brilliant ball playing.
Well, he was in that sort of older system. He was in that older system that in the same way that Joel Ward looked okay in a deep 4-4-2, 4-5-1 that we played sort of Pulis or Allardyce style. But as soon as you ask him to cover him behind, Joel Ward looks like a fish out of water. And similarly, Scott Dan, when he has to actually, as a central centre back in the three, push up into midfield when you've got the ball but higher up the pitch, he's not able to do that. He's just not got the positional wherewithal. And at the moment, it just looked, well, it's one game, so we shouldn't get too carried away. And I was saying all these things very much in context after the match when I was talking about it. It is only one game, but it did look a little bit like a punk band trying to play modal jazz. Mm. It just looked like, you know, completely the wrong format. You've given this guy who only knows how to play three guitar chords a saxophone and said, go and emulate John Coltrane, and he's gone, what? I don't know what you're talking about. You just ask them to do something that's completely foreign to them, and some of them might adapt. Some of them might just be a little bit naive, like the two other centre backs there, who are, you know, 19 and 20, which is very young to be playing as part of central defence in the Premier League. Some of them may not adapt at all. Gonna have to take it, you know.
But we have had pre-season playing under this system, and that's the thing. We've had the whole pre-season doing it and trying to implement it. It has only been a few games. The weird thing is, though, is only having five or six games with a few players trying to put this formation, a new tactical thing in place, and then suddenly bringing in players that haven't played during pre-season into that system. Which moves me on to the Joel Ward situation. And Fosu Mensah, who's only been at the club and training since probably Tuesday, Wednesday, pushed straight into that system. So now suddenly, out of the back three, you've got one player who's never played in the Premier League, one player who's playing a new system for a new team that he only just joined in that week. You've got a right wing back who hasn't played any of the pre-season at right wing back. And it just looked as if it was, I don't know, it was set up to fail. After I was looking in the pub at the lineup, and when I saw Ward in there, I was trying to figure out what formation we're actually trying to play, because I didn't believe that actually he was going to walk into that starting lineup. And I can see why he wasn't picked in pre-season. I don't know why he was picked then.
Come the middle of September, it might end up looking, you know, super coherent, and this will sound like a ridiculous conversation. But you look at that performance on Saturday, and it was a bad, bad, bad performance.
It's not a ridiculous conversation because it was bad.
It was bad. There's no point denying it was bad. But first of all, I think you have to listen to what David Wagner said afterwards. He said 3-0 flattered them. And even in playing badly, their keeper started to make three or four really good saves. It wasn't just the 3-4-3. Wolf had an off day. Wolf just wasn't there at all. Wolf looked like he was worried about getting battered from minute one.
And he did get battered.
Partly because of the referee, and I agree. But Wolf looked like he just made the wrong options. Benteke doesn't work in that system for me. He doesn't work hard enough. But it was, I can only, yeah, we've talked before about what I like to call the Pawson's murmur at 2 o'clock when the teams come out. And it was like literally the whole pub was just going, this is not, because we talked last week on the pod when we thought that Fosu Mensah was coming in. And we said, well, this is a good problem, because does he come in as the third centre-back and that releases Luka to go into midfield? Does he come in as the right wing-back for whatever you call it, and that releases Andros to go further up? But these were good issues. So where does Loftus-Cheek play? Blah, blah. And so the Ward thing was a complete and utter curveball. And he just looked out of place in the situation. And let's be fair, whatever the system, it was two mistakes by Ward that cost the goals. And that's not to do with the system. The system won Chelsea the Premier League. The system won Arsenal 10 out of 11 games. The system's not as alien to British football as everyone seems to think it is. Mm. But whatever system you play, you can't legislate for that rank bad defending at a corner, or for the second goal where he was caught.
The second goal, especially for me, was the one that did it, because Ward in that back, he was dragged out of position a little bit, but there was no cover behind him for the 1-2 that got played behind him. Although he was playing for getting dragged out, but when the ball got played into the box, I just paused it. When that ball's in midair, you've got Van Aanholt, and you've got the Rijdewald, and you've got Dan, and you've got Fosse Mensah standing in the line like they're zonal marking a corner or a free kick, and he just strolls up, Mounier strolls up and jumps, and no, Rijdewald doesn't even jump off the ground to challenge him for the header. It just feels like that three at the back has thrown everyone, and instead of having three players to mark a striker, it just looked confused and lost.
Well, I think to me it looked like they just weren't expecting the cross to get in. There were three players who just thought, well, there's no way this ball's going to be coming in.
Well, they should have known it was coming in for 3 seconds when that 1-2 went around. There was nothing else that was going to happen.
The whole Ward thing was, you know, everyone's going, well, Andros must be going, and well, Ward's going. We know Ward's going. So what that picking Ward was
strange.
Was really strange.
And behind Ward, did you hear that? That Townsend turned up late and was thus dropped for the game.
Well, they should have explained that after. I still, Loftus Cheek playing wide right. That it's
well. What also, if Benteke turns up late? You drop him for Keshi Anderson. Okay, well, you're a minute late. It's 10 points.
Well, he can't have been that late, because the team sheet has to be in it an hour before kickoff, and if he's not on the team sheet, he's not involved in the game.
Yeah.
Full stop. So he must have been on
it. It's just a theory.
Well, he must have been on the team sheet at 2 o'clock, so he can't have turned up that late. Also, the other thing as well is you can't play that system with Hennessy, can't play that like that. And what annoyed
you should probably miss off that at the end of that sentence.
Well, no, but you can't. But what annoyed me, because we saw Julian in the friendly the week before, and fair enough, it's a friendly, but he's comfortable with the ball at his feet. But what annoyed me most was that you could see Scott Dan in particular was so unnerved by the fans shouting, "Don't give it to Hennessy," that he started playing it into the middle, into unknown areas in the middle. But professional footballers shouldn't do that. Whatever system they're playing in, they shouldn't be getting instructions from the fans. You could see there's an element of panic. Yeah. Read through, and you can see Dan was doing his night, but it was a 5 minute moment of mayhem basically where everything went completely wrong. But we still, you know, they scored the third goal straight after Scott Dan missed the easiest chance he'll have all season. If we'd scored that, I think we would have still got a point. So it's
Benteke, if that had
you can't stress enough that that team are playing a system that they've played for a long time. It's a fairly straightforward system. They've played that system for half of the season before last and all last season. The players they brought in early, so they've had a lot more time to adapt to it. And I don't understand the panic. I don't understand.
Well, you shouldn't look that bad against the team that's
no, you shouldn't. And I said that
theoretically,
I agree, I said this
in TalkSport all week. Whatever system you play, you shouldn't lose. You should be able to beat Huddersfield. But having said that, we should be able to beat Sunderland.
But it's not just about beating Huddersfield, it's just scoring a goal against them. They're the only team that come into the Premier League on a negative goal difference. Yeah. And if we're boasting the likes of Zaha and Benteke on the pitch, then we need to look more dangerous than we did. The one chance that was the closest scoring was just from a set piece, which could happen against anyone technically. I just thought we'd break them a lot more down. And considering how open and it was at the back, I just thought that it possibly might have just been... It's not like we walked away just going, super good offensively and really weak attacking.
When we lost 4-0,
we looked lost up front as well. Zaha looks like he was trying too hard to be the main man, which he's been praised as for the last 6 months. It was a bit like he just looked lost as well.
His decision, mate. But when we lost 4-0 at home to Sunderland, we weren't in the pub going, well, we can't play this system anymore. We haven't got the players for this system. It was just a bad day at the office.
That's because I'd already been there since the 44th minute. Exactly. So
nobody was saying, well, we have to change it. We have to change everything off the back of that result. We have to change the way we play.
But we did change quite a lot after that result.
Not really. We brought new players in, but we didn't really change the system or the way we played football. It's just, Fosse Mensah had been there since Wednesday. It's just a mystifying team selection, but it doesn't mean straight away that it's never going to work and that we won't bring new players in to make it work. It's just way too early for everyone to go, I didn't like him in the first place.
I mean,
one of the most respected coaches in world football doesn't know what he's talking about. This whole nonsense. And of course it's going to take time, because we're a club that's played a certain way for 4 or 5 years. So it doesn't matter who you bring in. You know, Scott Dan has got to get used. Scott Dan's been playing a certain type of football where he's instinctively, muscle memory knows where he's meant to be on the pitch. and that's got to change. He's got to think about where he's done. But that's, you've got to give it time to change. You can't suddenly go, right, that's it, that's not working. Let's go. Let's get back to 4-4-2 or 3-5 or whatever it is. Because
it's interesting, though. You said probably about 5 minutes ago a very good point, but also quite glibly about, you know, that system not suiting Benteke. And to me, your system, you look at your personnel, you then pick the system that best suits the personnel that you have available, or you try and tailor the personnel you have if you want to adapt and sort of change systems. And then you hope that the players execute it properly day in, day out on the training field. And then when it comes to matches, they do the same.
Benteke is not good enough to impose a complete system around him. You assume when you come in that a player like Benteke is good enough to change.
Well, it's not just Benteke though, is it? Because if you've got a keeper like Hennessy who can't clip the ball out, and you've got a central defender like Dan who isn't able to push up and play as part of a midfield when he's without the ball, and you don't have a right wing back, and you don't have a striker who's able to drop it. I mean, you're talking about six first team players that you need to implement that different type of system. And I'm not the sort of person who thinks change is bad, or that any form of adaptation that the club chooses to make on a tactical level is necessarily bad, because we've had it work before in a different way. But it just strikes me as a slightly inefficient way to go about things, to say, right, we're changing from A to B. We're not really going to say why we specifically want to change from A to B, but in order to change from A to B, we're going to have to bring in five or six genuinely decent first team players. That's a big shift change in a very short amount of time.
Well, we've bought three in already. We've bought Ryderweld, who's played nothing but three at the back. Fosu Mensah's played three at the back. Townsend says he's really liked adapting to this new system. He's really enjoying it. Zaha says it's freed him to play the sort of football he wants to play. Loftus-Cheek has played three at the back with Chelsea. He's played all sorts of things. Yeah, but if Benteke should be good enough to adapt to that system in the way that Costa adapted when, and other Chelsea players adapted, like Victor Moses adapted when Chelsea changed to it after four or five games last season. They knew what system Frank de Boer was going to play, and Frank de Boer made it quite clear that that's a system we were going to play, so it's up to them. Of course he's going to bring new players in. It's up. You assume that Benteke costs 30 million quid. He's supposed to be a top class international striker. If he's not good enough to play, and it's not so much he's not good enough, he doesn't put the work in. He doesn't move. He's not mobile enough at the moment for that, and that's nothing to do with talent. That's to do with attitude. What mystified me is the fact, you know, he didn't start with the personnel that we thought he would start with. That's, and so you can't judge it yet, because I can't see Joel Ward starting for Palace again. I don't think you could begin to judge it until you see the players that we thought were going to be playing in the system that were.
Well, we might have to wait till the end of August then.
Well, we might do. Well, we've said this all along. We said this in the pod last week. And yes, we should be good enough to beat Huddersfield at this stage of the season, but stupid results happen. We weren't good enough to beat Burnley at home last season, or Swansea at home last season. But De Boer's been manager for 6 weeks. He's got to make a real sea change to the whole attitude of the club and the players, and of course that's going to take time. If it's still like this in 10 games' time, I'll be the first one to say he's got to adapt. But he knows that. He's one of the best coaches in the world. He knows that. And until we know why he played Ward or why he didn't...
there's that one theory. Were Huddersfield in a way kind of the worst team to play? Because he was asked during the week, is it a dream first game? But actually, playing a team like that who are so used to playing one way and know what they're doing, was it actually kind of the, you know, would an away game for us have been a better first game, Andy? We know we're good on the counter and we can just sort of play to our strengths rather than trying to change everything so quickly against a team who just know exactly what they're doing.
Well, I mean, again, with the caveat that it's one game, and let's not get carried away. There's just so many sort of warning signs there to be derived from it that I think would have been there regardless of the opposition. There was just a naivety to the performance that I think would have seen us in dire straits against most teams playing like that. I mean, they're not the only team in the Premier League, Huddersfield, who press. They're not the only team in the Premier League who are physical. They're not the only team in the Premier League who will sometimes look to go direct if they need to. You know, they're not the only team in the Premier League who try to play really high intensity, high octane, fast football at times. You know, these are pretty perma features of the Premier League. Lots and lots and lots of teams play in that way, whether it's just in one facet or all of those facets. So I don't see it being the issue that you can talk up Huddersfield too much. They look okay, actually. They look pretty tidy, and I don't think that they'll flounder this season. But a lot of teams coming up into the Premier League don't flounder. You can't just go, well, Huddersfield aren't the barometer that you need to look at, because if you keep on losing to teams of that ilk, and I'm not saying that we will or that we have, then you're going to be in a very difficult situation, particularly with the run of fixtures that we've got coming up.
Yeah.
But you could argue, you know, if you want, you could argue we didn't get Frank de Boer in on time. We didn't get a new manager in time. You could argue that's a problem.
We only had four pre-season games. Yeah. Looking back, that doesn't feel like that was that many.
No, it doesn't. But I think it's ludicrous. You talk about naive. I think it's naive to assume that if we'd started playing 4-4-2 on Saturday, or if we'd started playing 3-5-2 or whatever we played, that we would have won that game quite comfortably, because strange things happen this time of the season. Simple as that. And it doesn't help when Palace fans, after 25 minutes, just completely turned.
Yeah.
Because I've never seen that happen before. And it was understandable, because there was that panic. But that comes from the stands as well. I mean, that's... We talked... How many times have we said that? You're going to play youngsters and new players. You've got to be patient. You can't have it both ways. You can't say, well, great, I'm glad we've got a manager who's going to bring new young talent through, even if it's from Chelsea or Man United, but at the same time, as soon as that new young talent makes a mistake, I'm going to get on their back. You can't do that. It's as simple as that.
But is that kind of level of expectation that's been raised systematic of bringing in a world class manager?
Of course it is. Yeah.
So you're going to get some fans who are just going to suddenly think, well, we're going to beat teams like Huddersfield. We're going to finish top 10. Yeah. Regardless of the fact that it will take a bit more time to...
Well, that's fine, because we need to change our mindset about where we finish. But at the same time, these things take time. You've got to have some power. I can't believe how quickly the atmosphere changed on Saturday. It was astonishing.
I mean, it was only a few. It wasn't everyone, was it? It was only a bit. And to be fair, at full time, there wasn't any... There were mostly applaud. In fact, I saw Palace fans applauding and Huddersfield players off shaking their hand and stuff. Yeah. So, that, you know, it wasn't everyone, but there were some frustrated fans.
Yeah.
Let's wrap up part one there. In part two, we've got loads of questions
about what.
I mean, none of them are that positive. In fact, there's two positive ones that I've saved for the end.
I'll be honest, I was going to skip this pod until the result happened. I was going to go, right, I've done my one for the month, got to look after my newborn baby. But then I saw a song like, get my car keys.
It's not that not sort in of that pod, way. Is it? Whoa.
Right, I'll see you after this. Welcome back to the 5-year plan podcast.
Hey!
Pod 220.
Wow, they fly by, don't they?
Yeah, they do. Sponsored by Vector Printing for your printing embroidery needs. Go to vector.co.uk and there's Vector with her.
Okay.
I was in unison. And JCIS, a global research and brand consultancy from South London. Visit jc-is.com.
I will.
Oh, it's nice to have an Endicott back on the pod doing
it,
that.
Isn't it? It's lovely.
Yeah, yeah. Feels natural. Feels good. The first question is from Tweeting Nav.
Hi, Nav.
He says, shortest honeymoon period for a manager ever?
Yeah.
That's a good question. That surely has to be...
For older fans, Alan Mullery didn't even get the honeymoon. That kicked off before the marriage even.
He was never going to get one.
No.
Is it...
Dave Bassett when he
second time
around.
Okay, I mean I don't remember.
Neil Warnock second time around.
Neil Warnock, yeah, probably. True. Is it the worst first game for a new Palace manager?
Oh, that's a good question.
I know it's still really raw because it was only 3 days ago, but it feels like it to me. I can't think of a manager that had a worst given performance and everything.
Given the quality of players that. Yeah, we'd thought the squad had improved. Then, mistakes were made.
Yeah. Richard Nicholas.
Hi, Richard. Hi, Rich.
Says, has anyone got Big Sam's phone number to hand?
No.
No.
I haven't got it.
No, is that too soon?
Too soon.
I was at a do last week. I spoke to his, one of his retinue, he's not his agent, but like his media advisor.
My legal sense is twinkling.
No, no, he was just talking about there was no conspiracy theory. He was just exhausted. He was just really, 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 you know, whatever we want to think. But the subject did come up, because we know that his bonus has been withheld for 2 years, so he can't join another club. But I did ask him, does that count if he comes back to Palace? So I think his ears... I think... A lot of Palace fans, it's not beyond the realms of possibility. This is Palace. It's not beyond the realms of possibility that Allardyce is back in charge. But no, I think Steve Parish made a big call to get De Boer, and he's got to... He can't... I think somebody's... Is it Terence today, Red and Blue? Obviously, he can't blink first. He's got to...
Yeah. It would look It would look even worse to get rid of him, you know, say we don't win for the next 4 weeks or something. Yeah. It would look even worse to get rid of him then than it would to back him too long, would it?
That's a very good question. I don't know how long too long is, but how long Pardew was too long, but yeah. you have to bear in mind that our start this time last season was awful. That West Brom game was so dreary, and that set the tone for the season. This one was kind of so Keystone Cop slapstick bad that you kind of think he is, whatever we think about him, he is one of the most respected coaches in the world. And, you know, as Eddie the Eagle once said, you can't learn from success, you can only learn from failure. So
did he?
Yeah, pretty much. I think it was either him or Oscar Wilde.
They're very similar.
But you would hope that lessons have been learned after, you know, mistakes were made, lessons have been learned.
Well, Stephen Golding, Goldring, sorry.
Hi, Stephen.
Says, have we hit rock bottom, Kev? He's literally given that to you. But what? I would say...
We're not even second bottom of the Premier League.
I think it's a joke question, but I would say, if we are going to have a result that bad...
Oh, already this season. I see. Oh, right.
I know it's not rock bottom as such, but is it actually kind? Is the first game of the season actually, in a way, the best time to have that game? You get it out of the way early, and then you build from here.
Travis is young. I'm tainted by age and
cynicism. I'm trying to put a positive spin on it.
Yeah, no, it's I think that's a fair point. It's well, you for the love of God, you'd hope it is rock bottom. Yeah, if it's going to get worse than this, you'd be
maybe it'd be like 94-95 when we got pumped the first day of the season, then went on to a glorious win of the league and FA Cup double. Oh, no, wait, we were relegated.
Brilliant. Okay.
You don't know as well, I don't know whether managers, Trav and I were talking about this before you arrived, I don't know whether managers generally do this, but it could be De Boer's way of saying, look, well, I need new players in this squad, and I need them quickly.
Could be, Well, we thought that's why he was, well, I thought that's why he's playing Luka
I think it's the reason why it's so bad is it's not just one factor that's gone into this loss, there's five or six different factors. Number one, you've lost against a team that have been promoted with a negative goal difference, who were the underdogs to get promoted when they were in the playoffs at Christmas, let alone win the playoffs.
You've got a new system. Favourites to go down from the championship
last
year.
You've got an absolute new system. There's so many changes that have been made that loss just can't put me down to one. It's put down loads of different factors have come into it, and you can't blame it on one separate thing. You've got new starters, you've got new players playing for the first time in the league. Whereas if that had happened, if say we'd come into that game with Allardyce still as a manager, he's bought players in the last window that suited his system and whatnot, and that had happened today, well, then I would be really pissed off. But I think after a day of calming down, you look at it and just go, there's been so much change and so much difference that you can't put it down to necessarily one separate thing. Of course, after one game, everybody has to look at it and just go, right, that needs to change and that needs to change. But blaming it on too many things at the moment. Mm. One fan's blaming that thing. It's Ward's fault. No, it's the system's fault. No, it's the fact we haven't had enough pre-season's fault. Oh, no, it's the fact we're playing two 20-year-old centre-backs. That's the reason. Thank God there is numerous reasons instead of just one. And it just means that it might just be a fact that it does just need to slowly iron itself out over a few games. But then, of course, once the transfer window ends and you can't make financial changes, then you start to get worried if these types of things happen.
I don't genuinely believe that managers make selection changes to prove a point to chairman about transfers, but I do think it might have been meant to prove a point to Luka to say, I don't really care where you want to play, I need you to play as one of the three centre-backs.
To be honest, Luka's one of those players out of everyone I've seen signed recently that seems to care more about the fans. In all his interviews, he's mentioned the fans as the main thing. So if he was to stick back there, I'm sure he won't be too pissed off about it, because I think he understands that it's more about how it looks to everyone else apart from how he actually feels. And seems like one of those guys.
He looked genuinely comfortable in it in pre-season. And we got
good.
And him playing there frees up Loftus-Cheek to play a lot.
Well, we had a chat just before, and in this setup and the fact that it's so ball playing, is playing as a third centre back that much different than playing as a defensive midfielder? You're still Luka. In the same general area of the pitch.
Yeah.
So it's not really that much different to what he says he wants to do and has been signed to do.
And especially if you were looking to players, like you said, I think you're right about Scott Dan. I'm pointing at Andy Street here, by the way, which is always good radio. And also, he's really pleased that I've said, I think you're right. So now I've changed that. I'm pointing to Travis now.
He's on record now, so.
But you're right. I mean, Scott Dan's a better defensive centre-back than any of the others, probably. But in terms of carrying the ball into space in front of him, he isn't. But Luka is very comfortable doing that, and it also would free up, because the one big plus was Loftus-Cheek in the second half.
Yeah, we haven't even really gone over that yet.
Loftus-Cheek was immense in the second half. And I clearly, I thought there were issues with punching, but again, punching's oddly, in the last season, considering he was the most abused Palace player, is now the player that we make more allowances for than anybody else. He clearly wants to play with Punchin. Loftus-Cheek and Punchin makes more sense with Milivojevic as one of the centre-backs.
Can I ask you a question about Punchin? We've had a few questions about him. Billy T. Kidd.
Hello, B.
Hello, Billy.
Says, in what order would the panel rate our midfielders? I know Andy loves Punchin, but I have him last if we are playing two in the middle. He's gone. Kabay, Luka, Loftus-Cheek, MacArthur, Punchin.
MacArthur, Billy. Billy. I like the fact you name checks me, and I like your name. Billy T-Kid is good, but it sounds a bit Yorkshire.
It might just be Billy T-Kid rather than the Yorkshire
Cowboy. Maybe.
T-Kid.
It could be a Yorkshire Cowboy, you never know.
There's an argument for putting the first four in a different order, but I'm not having MacArthur over Punchin. Not any day of the week. I think Punchin is... I've said this before. You know how highly I rate Punchin historically for everything that he's done for Palace over the course of the time that he's been here since we've been promoted. But there's no doubt that the older he gets, the more he's going to be on the wane. So at the moment, out of the... What are the five?
Kabay, Luka, Loftus-Cheek, MacArthur, Punchin.
Loftus-Cheek is outrageously good.
Yeah.
So he's number one for me. Luka, two. Kabay, three. Punchin, four. MacArthur, five.
I'd probably agree with that, personally. But what do we do about Punch? Because there are a lot of people... He does split the fans, doesn't he?
It does seem odd, and I think we have mentioned it before, given the profile of player that we know De Boer wants to play, Punchin doesn't seem to fit any of that. He's much, much older than the sort of player. I know De Boer made him captain, which is a really good move. We all agreed. Mm-hmm. And he's still, in flashes, he's comfortable with the ball at his feet, which I think De Boer obviously appreciates. But, and he made some good tackles on Saturday, but mainly at in situations where he'd lost the ball in the first place. And he does slow things. Things do slow down. It's like, you know, part of the 3-4-3 thing is that it's quick change. Possession moves quickly all over the pitch, not necessarily always forward, but you're moving the ball about to try and find the gaps and the spaces. And it just kind of slows down a little bit with Punch. And it's... Part of me is delighted that De Boer seems to rate him. Part of me thinks he's not first. I hate saying it. Part of me thinks he shouldn't be the first choice. If you've got, for all that I said about Luka, a centre back, I think for me, Luka and Loftus-Cheek seems to be the logical. I mean, they seem to me to be players they're not world class, but they're international. You know, Luka is an international quality defensive midfield player. Loftus-Cheek looks like a player of great potential. And between them, they're, 24 and 20?
21 or 20, yeah.
And increasingly, that formation needs a lot of energy. Yeah. You don't imagine that Punch has.
And to be fair, Trav, Loftus-Cheek looked good in the first half, but even better in the second half when he dropped into centre mid, didn't he? Like he is a box-to-box midfielder.
He was the most fouled player this week, and it's just proved his driving ability down the field. Yeah. And there was numerous times where he beat two or three players and then got brought down. There was that one I think everyone was going to remember, which will probably be in the highlight reels at the end of the season, where he's made that, they put a ball through and it looks like they're going to be one-on-one with the keeper, and he sometimes makes it back, challenges, stands up, three or four touches, and he's got that 40-yard ball that's going straight to Zaha. And that was, you can't waste that type of box-to-box physical ability on the right or left. He needs to be down the middle.
Yeah, there's a touch of the tour.
And as we were talking earlier, about the kind of, do we fit this, like, do we leave the manager to fit this system, or do we kind of ask the manager to change up the system? As much as I love Punch, is there a player in every single position of a 3-4-3 that can do the job better than he do, than he can do? Possibly there is in our squad, so maybe he does drop down. As much as I do think he still adds to the team when he's on the pitch, I do think in that certain formation there are possibly players in our squad that can do the job better than he can do. Although he's a leader, and I don't agree. There's a lot of criticism he has. He has a massive job to still play at the club, but in the first 11 in a 3-4-3, maybe not.
This brings us back to the point on systems again. I mean, last season, when we went for that really good run, when everyone was fit and Sakho came into the team, we looked like we were a match for anyone. But what was increasingly a problem as the season wore on was, one, the injury to Sacco, two, the inability of Kabai to stay fit. Mm. Yeah. Now, you've got in Loftus-Cheek a player who's taller, bigger, stronger, better touch.
Younger.
Probably young. Well, not probably younger. Definitely younger. I was going to say younger, but you know, absolutely younger. Probably a better all-round footballer, to be honest, than Kabai, who would have slotted into that position and provides the driving runs from midfield that, within the context of that old system, would have been really, really valuable to break down the teams who sit back a bit more. You complement that with potentially the signing of Saka, and all of a sudden you're going, well, this is a really decent team playing a specific way. All of a sudden, because we've decided to completely adapt the way that we play, it means you're shifting all of these sort of moving tiles around. So now we're talking about, well, how do we accommodate the Ruben formation. Loftus-Cheek, who's potentially one of the better English central midfielders at the moment. How do you accommodate him into the system? And you think, well, are we going to play him effectively as a wide player, as part of the three up front? Are you going to just try and put him next to Punchin, who's better as part of a three in the centre of midfield? And you know, it just seems to be a slightly...
What you're saying is we shouldn't be accommodating. We should be
accommodating everyone right
players.
Now. Well, not quite.
Well, no, we... That's the opposite of what Andy said before. When trying to fit players who don't play the system into the system.
Yeah,
they have to learn to play the system, or we have to get better players in. Basically, we had the conversation about Benteke. The thing with Loftus-Cheek is that I think increasingly the phrase box to box midfielder is becoming increasingly redundant. It's like defensive fullback. Every midfield player is essentially someone who covers box to box. You've got to be the same as you can't have a fullback who doesn't go forward anymore. So this argument that you have to have one sitting midfield player and one box-to-box player, if we watch Luka's a defensive midfield player, but he's popping up on the edge of the other team's box as often as he is on ours, simply because that's how the game goes now, the pace of the game, and that's how fit you've got to be. And
but to me, Loftus-Cheek,
the only other player we've ever had...
driving with the ball.
Well, exactly, but the only player we've had really like is Williams in the past, but who's half the size of Loftus-Cheek. We haven't had a player who gets the ball on a half turn like he does, and just his first ambition is to head for the other team's goal.
That's more what I think a box-to-box player is, though.
Yeah.
And he did that numerous times the other day, where he's picked it up just in front of his own half and he's gone down to the edge of the box. Luka doesn't do that. He meets it at both points. But
yeah, what I'm saying is in terms of fitness and in terms of energy and in terms of that, you can't simply have a player whose role is just to sit.
He looks like he would have been the perfect player to upgrade that three in the way that we were playing last season, when we're talking about the fact Kabai might leave and how we deal with that. You know, if you wanted one player, you could have slotted into that system and that way of playing and really, really upgraded it and supercharged that team. It would have been Ruben Loftus-Cheek.
But then you're implying that you're keeping the three just so you keep punching in. And I think the argument for a lot of players is punching is not good enough, whether you play him in a three or a two or a...
Well, on the system then, the system, I've got a question from James Edmundston.
Hi, James.
He says, is Poundland tiki-taka... the future. That's really nice. Is Poundland tiki-taka the future, or should Frank come to terms with the idea that Palace are a direct attacking team?
No, but he's.
Did you want to get? I mean, Poundland
tiki-taka is a great lead singer for an 80s band, for a start.
Do you want to get stuck on the fact that you're known as a team that plays a certain way? I mean, the whole.
But you've brought
different players in who've got different strengths. That's the whole thing that he's, and it will take some time because he's changing the culture of the club. You don't bring those players in and go, "We're talking these fans." You know what these fans really like? They love, they love 33% possession. They love us getting it forward as quickly as possible, because we lost as many games as we won playing that sort of football under every manager, and we lost and we left a lot of games going, "I don't want to see that every week." Yeah. It's fine to keep us up. What do we want? You know, we say we want to see teams. We want to see us take on teams at home. We want to see us do this. We haven't been known for 20 years as a team that sits back and soaks up pressure. And you know, the 5-3-2 came about through necessity. Pulis came in and brought it to keep us up. And it just so happened that we had managers who played variations of it. So it's not like we're a team that's always from 1905. That's the way we're going to play football. We brought players in, and you want to see. You have to. The fact is, you should be able to play different ways. And De Boer's not. I don't think De Boer's the sort of man who's totally wedded to it. He'll play different ways in different games and at different types of the situation in the game. But to suddenly say we only play that sort of football and that's the only way we can survive is nonsense, because we've only survived by the skin of our teeth playing that way recently.
So is it basically a case of that we've got these new players, a few new players in that are heading us in the direction of this new system, but we haven't quite maybe got
it's basically we are going to play 3-4-3. We've known that since Frank De Boer became the manager. We've known two things about him. He'll play 3-4-3 and he'll get the players to play that way, or get new players, and he'll bring youngsters on. We have to adapt to that. We've got to adapt to it, because he's not going to adapt to us. It's as simple as that. He'll be sacked before he adapts the way he changes the way we play football. Yeah, okay, yeah. So we just have to get used to that.
I guess that means how long have we got to the end of the window? 2 weeks?
2 weeks.
2.5 weeks?
Yeah.
We must almost certainly be seeing some more signings then, surely.
I would.
Because he can't go the rest of the season with this squad then if he's going to play that system.
No, I'd be amazed if would there be a new striker and a new goalkeeper? I'd be amazed if
we have to consider the fact that we've already done our two, wasted our two, well, not wasted our two loans, but we've already used our two loans.
And yeah,
you used them well. So
yeah.
If you're looking at signing players that are there to replace first team players, it's what we're kind of, apart from striker, we're looking at a right wing back that's going to replace our first team right wing back, and a goalkeeper that's going to replace our first team goalkeeper. And if you're going to do that, you're going to have to fork out quite a bit of money. So if you were to loan someone, then potentially you'd loan someone that covers it. We've done the Fosu-Mensah thing. I think we'll be looking at two of the three positions. I definitely think we'll get a backup striker, but I just think it'll be one of the two out of a first team right wing back and a first choice goalkeeper.
You could kind of argue that Townsend and Fosu-Mensah are the first choice wing backs, because Townsend seems to be really happy playing there.
I prefer Fosu-Mensah to play there.
I agree, but that gives you two options there for a start off.
But I do think there's a few more positions than just one that we need to strengthen.
No, I quite agree. You don't know how many players are out there. I mean, De Boer knows more than we do, but again, you're looking at bringing players in to adapt to the Premier League. And in terms of youngsters from the academy, it already looks as though, excuse me, disappointingly, that Lukilo seems to be the only one that he thinks is ready to step up to the first team.
There's talks about Wan-Bissaka being a wing back, doesn't he, as well?
Yeah.
Played in pre-season. I've heard fairly positive things about him as well.
He likes Luke Dre as well, apparently.
Lanapo's been on the bench as well on Saturday. Yeah. So yeah. They're in and around, aren't they?
They are, but they're not. They don't look like we've got ready-made replacements. No. So I think in an ideal world, the way De Boer spoke, he would come in, have a look at Beckenham and go, oh, well, we've got three or four players here that are ready to step up.
But they will also if we're talking about players,
of course they will.
And they should be afforded it as much as new players.
Again, of course they should. But yes, well, I'd be amazed if we don't bring in somebody.
Yeah, it's gonna hopefully be a busy couple of weeks. Okay, so speaking on the right wing back issue, I'll go to left wing back, because Mickey Zonin 2000,
oh Mickey,
friend of ours, Mick, has said Schlupp or Van Aanholt.
Schlupp.
Simple as that.
Van Aanholt.
Should it be in Schlupp on Saturday then?
Travis and I were talking before. For me, Schlupp's just got... In that system, Schlupp for me has got more energy. I suppose you could... Van Aanholt's probably a better natural defender, but Schlupp's a better natural wing-back.
Funny that Schlupp was playing at centre-back tail end the last season. But I think Van Aanholt was a perfect signing for a manager who got the best out of Van Aanholt. The time that he was managing Van Aanholt, it was like, I know this guy can do the job for me with what I want to do. I think Schlupp would be better suited to possibly playing the... I don't know.
I really don't know.
Van Aanholt seemed to get lost a bit positionally. He got dragged into the middle quite a lot in the weekend.
That third goal as well, he was well out.
Yeah. He got dragged into the middle
The other issue as well, I don't know how good Riederwald's English is, so it might be that he wants a Dutch-speaking left side.
I don't know how good his foot was at the moment, to be honest.
Well, it's one game.
It's one game.
As soon as he went two down, he looked right, and he played it safe for the rest of the game.
He's not been in a situation like that before, has he? But it might be as practical as he wants a Dutch-speaking left wing back next to Verwijn that side. I don't know, but for me, I'd rather see Schlupp there.
Also, this is a question I was going to ask in part one, and I forgot to.
Excuse me.
Because I was thinking after the game, wow, De Boer will have learnt so much from that game. Like, that was like a crash course in the Premier League. What will he have learnt from that? What were the main things he'll have taken away from that game?
Well, he may not have known before. I didn't read 5-year plan because you asked. Didn't you say five things that he would have learnt? So you've already written the answer to that, haven't you?
I don't remember writing that.
Somebody wrote it in 5-year plan.
We've got a lot of people.
That was Tweet Nav who sent a question.
That's a question that only another coach could answer, really. He would have learned that Ward probably isn't the right player. Because, I mean, that's the one bit where the fans really... Everyone was shouting for Hennessy to... Ward was standing on his own, literally on his own, no one near him, 50 yards. And everyone was shouting for Hennessy to throw the ball to him. And you can see Ward's body language. I was like, no, don't. The last thing you want to do is that. Because there's nothing I can do with it if you throw the ball to me. I haven't got the pace or the power to do anything with it. And nobody seems to be coming towards me. So I presume if he's learned anything, it would be don't pick Joel Ward in that position. And again, Joel Ward did a brilliant job for us last season. And in a straightforward 4-4-2 is somebody you would definitely consider as the right back. But it doesn't work in that system. So that's what he will have learned. He will have learned not to... I presume he'll have learned that Loftus-Cheek's better as a central midfield player.
Yeah, yeah. I think he might have learned.
Yeah, I think he might have learned something about his goalkeepers.
I'm surprised it's taken you that long to bring
keepers,
it up.
As opposed to keeper.
Well, to the extent that he's not getting one in the next few weeks, I would hope that he would have learned that if he wants the back four, including the goalkeepers, or the back three and the goalkeeper, to be pinging it about, then there's one keeper there who's actually better with the ball at his feet than the other one.
But it's the exact opposite of this time last season when Mandanda played in the opening games when he wanted to ping it about and the two centre-backs were going, no, what are you doing? For the love of God, we don't want the ball. Just boot it as far as you can.
Yeah.
And now you've got a keeper whose job is to ping it about who's just going, I can't in all honesty do this.
Do we not think there's going to be a keeper coming in the next couple of weeks?
Oh, I think there will be. I think they'll definitely want to be.
He's gone on the priority list, surely.
On the priority list. Apart from having a backup striker, because once Benteke goes.
Yeah. I got an interesting question here that I think is one for Travis. It's from Fog Dentum.
Hi, Fog.
He says, do you think the size of our pitch might limit our ability to change the way we play? Speroni told me at the Play at Palace day, back in the summer, I played right back. Thanks. It was easily one of the smallest pitches in the Premier League. So maybe the small size enabled Huddersfield to press us so intently and why we struggled to move away from a direct style of play. Do you think that's something that's been an issue for Palace the last couple of seasons?
No. I don't think you could look at the size of a pitch and it can't have that much of an impact on how you play, because there's been times that you could look at that and just go, the small pitch has helped us in certain ways. I don't think that can be used at all, although sometimes you do look at it and see, you know, balls being pinged off and reaching the other end of the pitch and causing attack straight away. It's obviously not Wembley. Mm-hmm. It's not that massive, but I don't think it makes that much of a difference. And I think at the style of football we're trying to play, it should potentially help us.
If it is a small pitch, then hats off to Huddersfield for getting that much space in the second half. Then they got that much space on a small pitch.
If it's such a small pitch, then having two wing backs that give so much space each side of the box, that shouldn't be happening either. Because the amount of times that a player from the centre of the park for Huddersfield could just ping it, you know, or run with the ball into the wings, it was just too dangerous.
Malcolm Allison used to change the size of the pitch from game to game.
Oh, really?
Depending on whether they played the other team.
No, we haven't got that much leeway at Selhurst Park.
But the thing is, with a pitch, it can only be bigger or smaller within a fairly small sample size. Because the parameters of pitch size are maximum and minimum fairly set.
It can't make that much of a difference, the pitch size.
I don't think we've
When I used to play football, I wouldn't play on a pitch and think that it didn't ever make that much difference to me, to be honest. It just felt like the bigger the pitch was, the more space we had, the smaller the pitch was. A touch or two here and there. At the speed the game's played nowadays, a few inches here and there doesn't really make that much of a difference.
That's a very good
And
point.
I don't think that the size, the fact that we have a small pitch, it's the same for both teams at the end of the day.
Also, as well, it's interesting. The goal sizes and the pitch sizes were set a long time ago when the average height of a footballer was about 5'7". So the pitch and the goal are smaller now anyway, because players are so much taller and more powerful.
And fitter and quicker.
Goal sizes haven't changed, I think, since 1908.
Pitches are played so much that the ball can be played around the park a lot.
That's really interesting.
Under the Premier League rules, they're all supposed to be the same size.
No, not the same size.
There's a parameter, isn't there?
No. I think you'll find rule K15. unless the league otherwise allows.
They're not rules, they're laws.
No, the laws are of the game, instituted by FIFA.
These are the
rules of the Premier League.
I've argued with a lot of things about it, Mike.
It's got to be either... Well, it's not got to be either. It's got to be 105 metres in length and 68 metres wide. And you can only get special permission for it not to be that if your stadium construction prevents it from being that size.
So you can't do Malcolm Allison anymore.
So it certainly used to be the case that it would be within the range.
Selhurst Park on their pitch would be the same size as when Tottenham play at home on their field to see what's they're going to have to make that shorter.
To the extent that Wembley's pitch size is bigger than the standard for the Premier League,
they'll have to
reduce the playing surface size to Premier League standard size.
That's interesting.
Okay.
So
that's genuinely interesting.
So Speroni was wrong then. It's not one of the smallest pitches in the Premier League because they're all the same size.
Well, no, because then I'd have to track back and look at what the regulations said for the last five seasons. As much as I love Julian Speroni, I'm not doing that to validate. He might be right, he might be wrong.
The pitch at Stamford Bridge looks small because the stands are so close to the... Yeah. And it sort of slopes down. So it's to do with the size.
So at Wembley, there's going to be a...
Stadium. Well, that's interesting. We've all learned something there.
There was a half-hearted... Somebody a few years ago talked about... There was a season where there were the fewest number of goals scored in the Premier League for a long time. And there was a suggestion, half-heartedly, that you should make it 10 a side because, to say the pitches and the goals were meant for much smaller people.
Yeah.
And much less fit people as well. So.
Mm.
Do you think they'll ever change them?
No. And you can only have a triangular corner flag if you've won the championship, is that right? Otherwise you've got to have a square corner flag.
Something, there's something.
I thought that was an urban myth.
No, it's not. It's not.
Hmm. Okay.
And you're not allowed to stamp on Tottenham players either, it turns out. As we discovered yesterday. Not right in front of the referee anyway.
Well, I mean, that was a red card.
Stupid. It's just one of the funniest things I've seen.
Are you ready for possibly one of the most sort of negative questions?
Is it about FFP?
No.
Born ready.
It's from Jack Laws.
Hi, Jack.
And he says, would it suit us to exit the League Cup as soon as possible so we can focus on the league? It's been one game.
I like that question.
You've cheered. That's really cheered straight. Yeah.
That's made my evening.
That's what you need to do is ask the most pessimistic question. I've got a feeling we will probably see the youngest ever squad.
Yeah.
In the Ipswich, isn't it? I suspect it will be the youngest squad we've ever turned out in a game.
Oh, would that be the right decision?
If they end up winning 7-0.
It felt like one of the youngest squads we'd ever fielded in a Premier League game.
It did feel that way. Yeah, it did.
I reckon a couple of new signings had dropped our age average by about 2 years.
Yeah, we were the oldest, I think, last season. Or one of the oldest.
We were in the top four. Fourth oldest.
And it was 20, Watford were the oldest.
Yeah.
Okay. A question from James Mitchell.
Hi, James.
He's put... It's a transfer question, but he's given us six options.
Oh,
so it's like a multiple choice.
Is it about FFP?
No, I just told you it's a transfer question.
Oh. Well, it might be the initials of one of the players.
How many choices?
Six. Okay, he's put
Frank
which
for Frankie.
He's put which of the following is most likely to enable us to avoid relegation? Again, it's a bit of a negative question, but anyway, I'm going to roll with it. One, a new centre back, and he's put in brackets Mamadou Sakho. Two, a new right wing back. Three, a new goalkeeper. Four, a change in tactics. Five, a new manager. He's put, no, this is not the wrong answer. Not the right answer. Or six, Donald Trump / Kim Jong-un / World War III.
I think it's too early in the season to be hoping that World War III might intervene.
Mm-hmm.
And there'll be a four-week break while everyone gets the ash off the pitch. But two and three are the answers. No, what were the right wing back and goalkeeper?
Yeah. It would be very Palace, wouldn't it, that if we, like... I was about to say got to a cup final, but we did. We were on the verge of like Champions League qualification, and then World War III happened.
Yeah.
Andy?
That would be... I just love that. Yeah, they're typical Palace, isn't it? It could only happen to Palace, couldn't it? And
the whole world's obliterated.
Yeah.
Andy, you're going to go number three, aren't you?
It was number three goalkeeper?
Yeah.
Yes, I was.
Travis?
After the other day, right wing back.
Okay. So we're all split there. You said no.
I think we've got the well. Actually, no. I think.
We already have someone that can do that in terms of the other day's performance. Having someone else within the squad or someone else you can bring in as a right wing back is the answer at the moment. I think the player was there.
What about
to do
if we bring in
day.
Another centre back and actually put Fossey Metz? I was surprised because everyone.
But I think Tompkins. People have said
he seems to be frozen out, doesn't he?
I don't know why, as he did so well the tail end of last season.
There's an issue with his pace, apparently.
As a
third centre back,
right?
Yet another example of us changing the system without actually thinking about what we've got in the squad.
Exactly.
But James,
no, we're not. But again, you have to go back to the fact we've got Frank de Boer. You can do the fishing rod action as much as you want. Frank de Boer, when he came in, and you can't blame any Palace chairman for going for one of the best coaches in the world. Probably
is he one of the best coaches in the world?
Yeah, by reputation, of course he is. And there's no, it's it's pointless going down that situation. By reputation, you talk to any coach, any player, yes, of course, he's got a reputation as being one of the best coaches in the world. I should think Steve Parish was probably as surprised as we were when De Boer went, all right, I'll think about it. It's going to be 3-4-3. And the last thing Steve Parish is going to do is go, well, we haven't got the players to play that, because De Boer's going to say, don't worry, I can make any player into that 3-4-3 situation.
But is it interesting, James's list there, there's six, well, all right, take away the World War III, there's five options there. All right, take away the new manager. There's four options there, but the we didn't all agree on. So there are clearly still lots of things to work on. It's not one solution.
He'll be looking to bring players all over the place who are ever available. Simple as that. And you'd guess there's a little bit of money, because two of the players we brought in we didn't pay for, and one we paid €8 million for. So you'd hope.
Although we have been told that money is going to be tighter than
We know, but still, there's still we haven't spent a lot of money compared to what we spent in January.
We are third lowest spenders.
And Tompkins is a good player, but he's a good player again in a conventional situation. But you don't go, all right, I've only got an average player, I'll change everything just to work around the average player. He's brought in players that are used to the system. Yeah. The right back thing is interesting, because I do think we've got two options there already, and you'd be looking to improve at somewhere else, which for me is striker and.
I think Fosse. Well, I know he's been playing Townsend, but I'd like to see Fosse Mensah out there. I think he's got the attributes.
I'd like to see Fosse Mensah out there, and I'd like to see Townsend play further forward.
Yeah, because when Townsend came on at half time on Saturday and did play further forward, didn't he? In front three, we instantly looked a bit more balanced. We started making chances.
More energy, crosses came in.
A bit like we were last season then.
No, but we weren't, were we? Clearly, if we were, we wouldn't have had to sack our manager at Christmas and get Allardyce in, who then didn't win a game for eight games. So clearly, and the only reason we eventually stayed up,
does he also mean in the second part?
The only reason we stayed up is we bought four players. Nothing to do with the system. We bought four players in that were better than players we already had. That's why we stayed up. Yeah. We've bought three players in.
Fit the system we wanted to do them. We've bought
three players in that are better than players we got.
We were
a poor side last season.
For half the season.
For most of it. We were a poor side for the first seven or eight games of Allardyce's reign.
Yeah,
it didn't wave a magic wand overnight. And in fact, we stayed up because we beat really good teams. We didn't beat them because of the system. We lost to Burnley, Swansea, and teams like that because of the playing the system that we're all going, we have to get back. Chelsea, the only time we really played well last season was Arsenal at home and Liverpool away. And Liverpool away was almost back to the wall. Chelsea was back to the wall. System goes out the window and things like that. You can talk about courage and determination and resistance and pride and resilience and all those great English words, but we didn't stay up last season because we played a 4-4-2 and we had an English manager. So it's pointless to say that's the reason we're going to go down this season, because we've changed that. It's just not true.
We have had a lot of questions of people saying, really split, like some people saying, oh look, I don't think the new system works, you know, let's change it, kind of thing, which I think is too soon to say that. And people saying, well, Allardyce got eight games, said it would take eight games, and it did to implement it and stuff. And then other people are saying, well, Frank de Boer has had pre-season, but that's not been eight games. So people are really, really split on what we do, how long we give a manager and what we do.
No, they're split on how long we give this manager. And we were split, eventually we were split on how long we should give Pardew. But there was never a stage with Allardyce or Pardew when we were going after four or five games of the second season. Like last year, Pardew, we were shocking the first part of the season. And then we had the international break and we picked up a bit. There was no one going, well, we'll get rid of Pardew. We've had three games, he's terrible.
I think people were doing that after about the first four or five for Allardyce.
I think
that Allardyce came in and a lot of people didn't want him in the first place. I think that had a lot more to do with
that's fair, but I think it does show that, you know, fans are prepared sometimes to get on the back of someone very, very early.
I also think there's an element of he's a foreign manager. We don't know him. He doesn't seem that friendly. Doesn't wave that much. There's an element of that as well. Pardew got way more time than he should have done.
Could he wave more?
Because he's you know, one of our own.
Yeah.
Allardyce, ex-England manager, affable sort of bloke, good reputation. People knew that he'd got teams out of trouble, so he got
and
more
hadn't
time.
Failed in that respect. Yeah. So he gave him the time.
I can't see the point of getting on. I personally can't see the point of getting on new managers and new players back this early. I don't understand.
Because you're a grown-up, intelligent, mature person.
It's
that's
the first time
why.
He's
but
ever
there's
said
a lot
that,
of people. That, a lot of people that I've spoken to that are just straight on the. There's a lot of people that feel it's like that question that was asked earlier about the Palace way of playing. What is the Palace way of playing? People are stuck with this idea of what should work and what should happen for us, whereas the reality is that we've played a few different ways to keep us up over the past few seasons. Generally, with four at the back, but it just feels like people are a bit stuck in their way of like, all right, that worked for us last season. This isn't going to work for us this season. Just going back to this very old-fashioned way of having two typical English centre-backs that just kick people and win headers. Yeah. And there's no time and space for change at the moment.
But equally, we need Frank de Boer also to be pragmatic at points.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying he won't be, because obviously there's not sufficient information to go on in relation to that yet. But if it gets to the end of the window, we've not brought in everyone that we need, and it becomes clear...
Then I think it's justified then.
It becomes clear that those players aren't bedding in for the moment. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not averse to change in the slightest. Certainly not in principle, and certainly not on the basis of it being a specific type of change. But there may come a point where he has to look at it and go, well, maybe this is a bit too much, a bit too soon. Let's put a long-term plan in place, maybe a five-year one, as to how we're going to sort of enact this change. But let's row back on it a tiny bit for now.
Well, the one thing I don't think he'll change is the three centre-backs. But, yeah, Allardyce tried three centre-backs against Everton. I mean, we might go to a 3-5-2 rather than a 3-4-3. But I don't think he'll change the three. I think he's totally wedded to the three centre-backs. And I think he's got three players who can play that system. And that's fine.
I suddenly remembered, as Andy was talking there, I remembered a question that I wasn't going to ask, but I'm going to chuck it in quickly, from Dominic Watts.
Hi, Dominic.
Who says, should we back Frank de Boer for the whole season, even if it could risk relegation? You talking about a five-year plan there.
I think the bare minimum has to be staying in the league, and if it looks like we're at genuine threat of relegation as the season wears on. I mean, it's very, very it's obviously premature to be talking about this,
but
there's no way that if I know the financial pitfalls are going down now as an owner, I look at it, and if you're getting into December and you're looking like you're either being cut adrift or you're doing particularly badly, no manager gets time in this league now. No manager at all.
And especially with the squad that we've got, Parrish just look at himself and he just goes, among all the teams that could potentially be up for relegation, and this is the same thing last season, people looked at our squad the whole season and just said, we're too good to go down. So if there is a point where it looks like it could possibly happen with the set of players that we have, then I think changes would and should be made, like Andy said, for the financial reasons of getting relegated in the long run.
The flip side of that, from Frank de Boer's point of view, Frank de Boer is going to work the hardest he's ever worked, because the Inter Milan thing can be explained. Mm-hmm. Failing at Palace would be a massive, massive dent to his reputation. I'm hugely excited by Frank de Boer coming in. I still am. I still think it's potentially the right way to go. But having said all that, I'd be the first one to say, if we're 12 games in and we've got 2 points... Mm. No, staying in the Premier League is more important than
anyone.
Than maintaining a loyalty to somebody who clearly isn't able to do it. And Steve Parrish says, and he said Steve Parrish won't, any loyalty or sentiment will go out the window, and we'll get somebody in, and then we'll start arguing again about whether 4-4-2 is the right way to go, and we can shout hoof it to our heart's content then, can't we, and aimlessly luffed it up towards Benteke and hope that somebody gets on the end of it. And then that might get us enough points to steer us
That's
through.
That's not how we were playing during that good run under Allardyce. You know, if you remember the goals that we scored against Chelsea, it was direct, but like on the floor, down the flanks, and attacking with pace from slightly deeper positions.
That's how we were playing when we lost at home to Swansea and to Burnley.
It was mixed, wasn't it? You know, the first goal against mixed. Arsenal was a long ball forward that Benteke flicked onto Townsend.
I'm not saying it's not... I just think it would be a backward step, to be perfect. And I think there comes a time when we have to break out of this, it's the Palace way, it's this, that and the other. We want to go forward as a club. There are certain things you have to do.
Everybody's
been screaming about, we've got to beat people at home, we've got to take people on. All right, fine, let's go back to the old ways where we sit back and... But if we'd done that against Huddersfield, if it was an hour gone... And we'd sat back for the whole game and let Huddersfield come on to us. Everybody would be going, what's going on? What are we doing? Yeah. This is ludicrous. It's Huddersfield.
We definitely tried against Huddersfield. We definitely tried to be attacking. We just made too many terrible, sloppy, immature errors at the back.
The whole thing went. It was, everybody made errors all over the place. And up front as well.
Yeah.
Sahar made errors. Sahar didn't have a good game. Benteke didn't have a good full stop. So nobody had a good game apart from Loftus-Cheek in the second half. So that's why this argument is... It's one of those really bad days at the office, which we gave Allardyce a lot of credit for a lot of, it was a bad day at the office, Sunderland, it's not like him. we just need to give one of the best coaches in the world the same degree of loyalty and patience that we gave to Allardyce and Pardew and Warnock and Holloway, for the love of God. You know what I mean?
That's true, yeah. Well, speaking of Frank de Boer then, Jesse Boyce, designer for our for the fanzine, has said, has Frank de Boer invented a new genre of touchline chic?
Oh, the slacks.
With his jacket and chino picnic getup.
Yeah.
Not a fan?
Not right, just, no.
Would you prefer him in like tracksuits and trainers?
No, I just prefer him in a proper, I just like things to match if you're going to do that sort of.
It's like
I didn't like the Schalke manager, just the t-shirt and jeans. It's like, take it seriously, mate. What's
more with pre-season?
I don't know, but it looked like he won a competition to be there. It's like, yeah. Sammy Lee looked like he was more at home with the chinos and the blazer comment. Yeah, that looked like a look he could get
Sammy
behind.
Lee doesn't wear anything other than tracksuit, I think.
It's
ever.
Impossible to imagine. It doesn't matter what he wears. Your mind won't let you see in anything other than a tracksuit. It's as simple as that. He could have his wedding suit on. Your mind would register tracksuit, basically.
Okay, the next question is from Daniel Schilling.
Hi, Daniel.
Hi, Daniel.
He says, despite the money spent on the disabled sections of the ground, when will the club acknowledge the view from all sections of it is abysmal? I think he tweeted a couple of photos as well, didn't he, yeah. Andy, that went around.
Yeah. I'm right thinking that there's part of a new facility at the front of the maze down, but not fully part of it. I think there's still some people up near
the Homestead.
I think it's the top of the Homestead near about A or B. It's still a bit crowded. Where they have the box where the TV gets presented from, with the stick above the top of that, there's a section behind there where you can't necessarily see over.
Yeah, and something better needs to be done, frankly. Yeah. It's not good
it's
enough.
Out, right? Yeah.
I do not give a shit if it pisses people off that they're being moved. You're not disabled. You can go somewhere else in the stadium where your view isn't going to be impeded as much as someone who needs to have proper facilities put in to accommodate.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I'm surprised as well because they have tried to improve access for wheelchairs in other parts of the stadium as well. Again, it's about time because I think this is a hang-up from previous administrations, basically, because the Premier League, all levels of football, have got the bare minimum that you have to do for disabled and immobile fans, and then there's what a club should be doing for disabled, immobile, blind fans. It's like Arsenal, for example, have got commentators for blind fans, so they've got their own commentating system all the way through, or they've got people to describe the game to them if they wish, which is how it should be. And the view for disabled fans at Arsenal, the facilities are perfect, and disabled fans, there is an argument some disabled fans use, they don't want to get in for nothing, of course, but certainly helpers should be, if they need them, should be able to get in for nothing. And as Andy says, if it inconveniences a few fans who have to move somewhere else, then so be it. Yeah. It's always been a factor of the fact that our stadium's been quite dilapidated. It's always been, unfortunately, at the bottom of the list, I think, for improvement. But there's no excuse for any Premier League club with the money it has to not make the facilities for non-able fans as good as they can possibly be, basically, and for the people that are at the game with them. There's no excuse for that anymore.
And improving the facilities that are already there instead of just adding new ones.
There is the argument that it'd be easier at the Emirates. It's a new... I
understand that, but it's still, there's room. If you have to lose... If it's a financial thing, tough. If you have to lose 100 seats and the income from 100 season tickets, then you have to lose that, basically, and you have to make it... But we all know that the lowest proportion of any club in the Premier League's income is actual ticket sales. That's a drop in the ocean compared to sponsorship and whatever. So if you have to lose that little bit of money, you can accommodate fans. It's not completely sold out. You can accommodate fans and the facilities for...
I think everyone listening to this can agree that if it was lower on the list, it should be higher on the list.
Of course it should.
If steps can be taken to renovate the inside of the club shop, if steps can be taken to paint the gates,
and
if
ramps.
Steps can be taken to...
And
put,
ramps.
Steps
and ramps.
If steps... Very good. If things can be done, thank you very much, to build this whole fan zone thing outside the main stand, then the bare minimum that disabled people going to matches deserve is to have exactly the same experience to the best that they can as other fans.
I don't think
having an impeded view by having a stupid part of the Arthur Waite's awning blocking them, or you know, the press bit for Sky in front of them.
It was ridiculous.
The pizza, you know, just sort it out. It's not difficult.
I should clarify as well. I'm not in any way suggesting that they are low priority for Palace as a club. They're clearly not. But in the past, because of infrastructure issues and let's be fair, in the past we didn't have that many fans, disabled or otherwise, so it wasn't an issue. So it is, of course, it's an issue for the club, and they're aware of it, but it needs to be sorted out. And if one disabled fan tells us it's not good enough, then it's not good enough.
Yeah, simple
as that. And especially, as Andy says, if it's outside infrastructure that's getting in the way. And also, it's not like we've got... We're not that big a club. It's not that many fans we're talking about either, unfortunately. But we've got away fans as well. But it needs to be sorted out. And I'm sure. One thing I think you can always say about Parrish and Browett to an extent is that once things are
highlighted,
they do tend to try and sort them out.
Yeah, and I did see that Daniel's tweet got a lot of responses. So hopefully, this is something we can update positively in the future.
But also, the thing is as well is that we can highlight and publicise it, but the people the club need to be talking to are the disabled fans themselves, because they're the ones who can tell the club what they want. We can't. We can say nice things and good liberal things, but in terms of actually what they need for all sides, it's not just getting there. It's not just getting in, is it? It's toilet facilities. It's catering facilities. It's not getting. It's all sorts of stuff. So
well, hopefully that will be improved, and we can hopefully update people on that as and when it happens. I've put a couple of positive questions because I know we've had...
Right, it's been fun. I see that.
For the end of this section...
Is it about babies?
No,
it's not. I'm an expert on that.
The first one...
When did your baby start crying during goals on Sunday morning?
So he'd been sitting in perfect silence since he'd woken up at about 6 o'clock, went downstairs, sat there for a good few hours.
Just as you got home, apparently. Was that
no comment. Sat down there for hours, goals on Sunday comes on, completely silent, even with Chris Kimara's witterings in the background. The Palace highlights come on, and within 2 seconds, starts absolutely wailing. And I know how he felt.
Good. Already a Palace fan, probably.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you know the medical term for that, don't you?
What's that?
Coincidence. Also, was he sitting in your lap?
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's it. You tensed up then.
You were crying as well, so he just copied you.
Maybe that's true.
Yeah. You'd probably just pushed him off your knee and gone, "Ah, for the love of..."
Right.
Okay. Wait, swearing in my ear.
Couple.
Who's Hennessy? Oh, yeah, so I'm sorry. We did swear last week when he was on you. But we,
did we?
Yeah, we did. Yeah. By which I mean I did.
Right. Fun two questions, and they are positive ones. First one's from Lardy Dardum.
Lardy Dardum.
he or she says, on a positive note, which was better? West Ham getting beaten 4-0 and lifting us off the bottom of the table, or Lewis Dunk's own goal?
Lewis Dunk's own goal.
Yeah. Well, the West Ham thing was because I was already explaining to a friend who was staying with us, a baffled friend, that 3-0 was great because alphabetically, we'd already been lifted off the bottom of the tables, but it was nice to have it confirmed. If you remember last season, remember when we equalised against Bournemouth in the last kick, head of the game, that lifted
us. Was it
Benteke?
No, Scott Dan.
Oh, right. But that lifted us out of the bottom three before an international break, which cheered me up no end. So I was genuinely cheered up. For all that, I said, let's stop being negative. The fact that we were off the bottom of the table last night,
I quite enjoyed
the own goal was leagues better than that.
I also quite enjoyed, did you see Mendy's response to it on Twitter?
He put bullet header.
Bullet header. crying face. which I really enjoyed.
Yeah. It's not like the old days, supposed to give him a little consoling tap on the shoulder.
Steven Gerrard was going mental, oh, well, you know, at some point Mendy's going to make a mistake at this season.
That's what we all think, isn't it? That's great.
Yeah.
No, that's good. We need more footballers doing that, especially if it's against Brighton.
Yeah.
And finally, Matthew Ball 24.
Hi, Matthew.
Has put, we all need to have a positive outlook. There's still 111 points available.
Very positive. Yeah.
Has he not been listening to me for any podcasts ever?
Right, okay. That wraps up our questions this week. Thank you very much for sending them in. Sorry we couldn't answer all of them, but please keep sending them in each week. After break, we're going to preview Palace's trip to Anfield on Saturday. Welcome back to the 5-year plan podcast.
Hey, 111 points to get.
Pod 220, sponsored by Vector Printing. For your printing embroidery needs, go to vector.co.uk. It's Vector with a
K.
And JCIS, the global research and brand consultancy from South London. Visit jc-is.com.
I will.
That's almost like harmonies there.
Well,
a little bit, wasn't it? Yeah, it was good.
A few weeks in the making, but we got there.
So... Oh, and just another reminder as well, next home game is Swansea at home. The new issue of FYP, issue 49, I believe, one away from the big 5-0, will be available first issue of the season around the ground from like 1 o'clock onwards. It's a 48-page issue, so it's packed, and it's got a lot of very good stuff in it. So have a look out for that next home game. Right, Liverpool away next game. Mm-hmm. Traditionally, quite a good game for Palace in a way. But Travis, you made an interesting point off air that we've almost had a bit of practice against playing against Liverpool.
Yeah, exactly. I was speaking to Kev a little bit earlier about it, and it's out of every team that you don't want to play.
Let's put this in context to make Travis look even better.
Okay.
When I said to Travis in the kitchen, well, the good thing is we won't be playing another team who swarm around us like that, and then Travis, playing them next week.
There is. I think that Huddersfield, the way they're playing, everyone is basically just saying they aren't, that what Liverpool do, they've got another German manager. It's that German way of pressing really hard up the field, and they are, with Salah in the team as well, they're really, 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 really dangerous at it. But in the same way, they are the first team to get promoted from the Championship with negative points. Liverpool have a major, major problem at the back, which was highlighted on the weekend as well. But if we couldn't score against Huddersfield, we've managed to take advantage of the fact that Liverpool have been weak the couple of seasons at defensively and have scored against them. The thing that concerned me about this weekend was that, will we actually break Liverpool down at any point? Knowing how much better they are attacking wise, I dread to think what happens if we start with the same lineup. I very much doubt Ward will be in there, and I think he would tighten things up majorly knowing that we're playing them. But if that was Liverpool this weekend, then it would have been four times as worse. Because on paper, they are four times as good.
Yeah.
Although football isn't played on paper, but you know, it's got to be a massive change around this weekend.
I wish it was, because then I would have to leave the Porsons. Just like look down at the piece of paper.
You'd guess that Coutinho wouldn't be playing against us.
No,
which is
I doubt it.
A big bonus.
Because it means that any free kick that Hennessy wouldn't have to step the wrong way would probably be saving it.
And against Watford,
it's
quite clear that despite what every single pundit Liverpool fan has said throughout Klopp's reign and throughout the summer, they simply can't defend set pieces. It's just, and they're poor at the back. They looked vulnerable to players running at them on Saturday.
But we've conceded more from set pieces.
I know, not necessarily against Liverpool. But I think there is the psychological element that for a lot of Huddersfield, and this sounds a bit odd considering you're comparing Huddersfield to Liverpool. Huddersfield were an unknown for a lot of our players. You go to Anfield with a really good record. So there is that kind of psychological...
Should they have been unknown? I mean, surely our preparation should have been...
No, of course. But they are. You can't... The fact is they won't have played against them before. They haven't played Huddersfield before. And of course, there was the preparation. I'm sure they would, but Frank de Boer won't have known that much about Huddersfield. I'm sure they would have seen videos of them, but I still think there would have been an element of.
You said off the game, you knew exactly how they were going to play.
Well, exactly, yeah, but
they did it anyway.
And I think also with the players, I think there can't help have been an air of perhaps unnecessary confidence. But they will go to Liverpool, and Liverpool players are much more of a known quantity. They know what the atmosphere is like up there and how we could beat it. Our fans will be right behind them, so there is that.
Well, it's in a way a kind of perfect team to play because we've now got it wrong against that system, so we know.
I don't think. Ask me that next week is the answer to that question. And I think I can't remember if it was Hopkins looking to curl one or Red and Blue or Army again saying almost the worst thing that can happen is that we go to Anfield and we concede possession and we win 2-0. With 30% possession, playing in a slightly different system, and everyone goes, well, that's the way to do it. It's like,
yeah.
I don't think the system will change at all next week. The personnel will definitely change.
Yeah.
And I think in a way, it might be one of those systems that's better suited to playing better teams. I don't know. But
so who do we think the personnel's going to be?
I would guess that Luka will play centre-back.
And Fosu-Mensah
will, and Fosu-Mensah right will play back. Right, but I would guess it would be Dan, Luka, and
Kabay will be fit to slot into the midfield.
It's possible. I still think I would be amazed if it isn't Loftus-Cheek and
Punch.
One other. I would be Loftus-Cheek and Kabay for me would be.
I mean, Kabay played first. For the under-23s today, didn't he? So
it's unlikely, but then I didn't think he'd put Fosu-Mensah straight in. But I don't think Fosu-Mensah would play centre back. I think Loftus-Cheek will start in the middle, and I would hope that Townsend starts.
In the front three.
In the front three would be my hope, because he did look well in it.
Yeah. What about you, Andy? Who do you like to see?
Or
we
may have bought somebody by then.
We may have done.
Julian Spironi, goal.
I nearly said apart from goalkeeper.
I think that's fine. That's a perfectly valid shout.
Okay, that's right. Not an outrageous shout.
No, it's all right.
I agree with it.
It's
a force of
habit.
No, I agree with him. I think he's in the past, it's been muscle memory, and he's done it like a dead frog twitching. Finally, but now I think he's. I think 90% of Palace fans would go, "Why not play Julian in goal?" Okay.
Yeah. So I was a pioneer in that regard, as some would say.
Well, I wouldn't use that word, but
thank you very much. I would be dropping Luka back into that back three, pretty much for the reason that you say.
Yep.
I would be shifting Fossey Mensch outside because I just think you're wasting Townsend by dropping him that deep.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And Joe Ward is Joe Ward. I'd be going with one of Punchin and Kavai, whichever's fitter, next to Loftus-Cheek. Because Loftus-Cheek, I don't. You're wasting someone who's that good driving with the ball by playing him as part of that front three. He's good enough technically to do it, but you've not got anyone who can do what he does from the centre of the park. So I'd be having him there.
Good point. So in a way, sorry to cut in. In a way, we've learned quite a few things from that Huddersfield game already, haven't we? We've learned obviously where to play Loftus-Cheek. We've learned Wardy doesn't work there. We've learned that Luca's got to drop back a bit. So you know, it has kind of taken us forward, although it was a terrible result. It has made us learn a few things about our squad.
Well, I think we knew could have said beforehand that Wardy wasn't going to work there.
We could have said that in the first 5 minutes of the pod and been long gone. And that's pretty much, it's been a long-winded way of getting around to exactly that. But no, but you're right. Yeah, you're right.
And then I'd go Schlupp or Van Aanholt. I don't think there's a huge amount in them. Into the difference between two of them, frankly. So whichever one you want to pick there, I'm not really too fussed one way or the other. And then as a front three, I mean, if you're going to retain anything of the old system, the front three of Andros, Wilf and Benteke, at least trying to play with a semblance of how they were playing, because as Kevin rightly says, Benteke cannot play as the sort of guy who comes really deep and tries to link stuff up massively with his feet. And Wilf and Andros seem to look best when they're providing balance on either flank. Yeah. And that's not necessarily got to say that, you know, every time they've got to get to the byline, dink one into the back post for Benteke to nod in. I'm not too bothered if they play a little bit more narrow and some of the width comes from the wing backs at times. But I just think those three have a bit more of an understanding than anyone else will have playing that far forward. Mm-hmm. So that would be mine.
Trav, you nodding along, agree with that?
No, the front three thing is the main thing. I just think Andros is, like Street said, wasted so far back. I think as a right wing back, being a left footed player as well doesn't necessarily help him. Fossey Mensah,
that's a really good point.
Demonstrated by that that bit of speed where he did make up for that Dan misplaced pass that put the player one on one. And I think one of the commentators just said, if you know that player's just stuck in a he was stuck in a French league mentality and the rest of the team was stuck in a... He would have put that away. If that was any other team and it was a Premier League striker, they would have slotted that away. But the pace that Fossey Mensah had just proves that he's the player you can play in that position. He's right-footed. If you're putting someone down there, Townsend is so obvious. He's like a budget Iron Robin. Like he's going to cut in on that side the whole time. If he does put a cross in on his right, it's not going to be a whipped cross across the front face of goal. It's going to be one of those ones where, all right, I can stick my right foot just underneath the ball and dink it in a bit. He's done it a few times, but I just don't think he's, even though he's better than Ward at that back, I think it's definitely more suited to the front three and has far more effect in that front three.
And also, if he's a part of the front three, then him and Zahar can swap wings.
Yeah. They could swap wing, all the time.
Happening. Yeah, it was a hard, just all the time. Plowed the same furrow, didn't he?
And also, it takes men off Wilf, doesn't it? Because if you have
He was marked out of that game, and definitely in the first half, which, like you said earlier, resorted him to being the player that we saw a few seasons ago that was complaining about challenges.
But we saw that last season, Townsend, when he was on form in the front three, he took people away from Wilf. Okay, well, there you go. That's our preferred lineups, hopefully. And that's the end of this pod. So we'll be with you again after Palace have played Liverpool at the weekend.
And after I've got Andy's hook out of my mouth.
thanks for joining us, lads. Thanks for being on the pod.
Pleasure.
And thanks for listening. We'll be with you again next week. So, bye.
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 Okay, let's get this cavity filled.
Doctor, I think your tank is leaking laughing gas. Gas? Did you hear you can save on gas at BJ's Wholesale Club?
Wait, you can save on gas at BJ's?
Yeah, members save on everyday low gas prices.
You gotta be kidding me.
Nope, these savings are no joke.
BJ's, absurdly simple savings. Shop today. Not a member? Go to BJ's.com/simple savings.
Sports Social Podcast Network.